is going on, ladies and gentlemen? Welcome on into the Lineup Logic Podcast, the daily fantasy podcast bringing you lineup construction ideas for the DFS slate to come on FanDuel. I'm your host, Sean Kane, coming at you this Wednesday afternoon with the Week 5 NFL Player Breakdown. We've got a lot to talk about, of course. As always, I've got about 5 different QB options and ideas for you guys, split into tiers based on salary, number of running back ideas for you, and then a much larger wide receiver pool. Of course, then I'll throw in a couple tight ends, a couple kickers, a couple defenses for you to consider. And the idea is always build a pool, sit down, compare my notes to your notes, listen to whatever other sources or resources you like to read or listen to, and try to figure out where does the value lie as we go into this week. You know, as we approach this show, I think it's one thing important. You got to know one of the angles that I'm a cash game guy through and through with football. I just always have been. That's the way I've approached the sport. A lot of, like, you know, basketball, football, I'm cash, and baseball, very, very GPP heavy. So just one of the ways that I like to approach it. So that's always the angle. That's always the angle, I think, for consideration. It's a head-to-head type, head-to-head type lineup, a player pool that's built well for 50-50s and head-to-head. So if you need some variance, you can always use the pool, you know, for 50% of what you're thinking, and then pivot from there. Just want to say, before we get into things, patreon.com/lineuplogic, $10. If you're liking the show, you can get $10 for the entire month of cheat sheets and the lineup show. What are the cheat sheets? Well, we have an expert survey with 3 other guys who give us DK picks, and FanDuel picks, where you get our tournament picks as well, our low owned options. We sort our player pool by position and in, targets that, you know, where do we think we'll find leverage? Who do you think is an elite scoring option? Where does the PPR upside lie? Where does the value lie? That kind of thing. So you get a much wider array of player options for both DraftKings and FanDuel. You also get a lot of extra free research resources from our analyst Josh Fernandez, who creates flowcharts for lineups, ownership percentage, things like that. You look up there this week, last week he had those up there. You get the lineup show too, another hour plus show. Friday night gets recorded. It's a live stream in which we go through and talk through cash game creation, lineup creation in the beginning part of the show. We take questions the entire time. We bullshit a lot and talk about matchups. There's a lot of really, really good ideas. I mean, last week's lineup show, we had a couple of highlights. I mean, Joe Berg came on in the middle, and the first person he mentioned instantly was Bilal Powell. He said, you have to consider Bilal Powell in this matchup. Like, there's nothing. I am 100% in on Bilal Powell. And what does he do? 75 yards to the house in the first quarter. So there's value in the show. There's a lot of really, really good ideas. I think it helps your process to kind of visually, if you're a visual learner, it's really good stuff. And, you know, if that's not for you, fine. Head up to over to lineuplogicdfs.com and get on our mailing list. You just sign up for the mailing list right there. I send an email out on Saturdays with all the resources that you may have missed from throughout the week, articles and stuff like that. And the player pool from the podcast. So if you're not writing everything down while you're listening to the show, well, here's a little reminder on Saturday afternoon. Anyhow, those are the resources we offer outside of the podcast. Subscribe, review, rate on iTunes. Thank you. That's enough of the business side. Let's get into player breakdown, figure out who we love. Who do you love? All right, quarterback position. Listen, I'm going to say this every week. If you have the option to play an elite cornerback against a mediocre defense, you have to consider it. I'm not going to, you know, I'm not breaking the mold or anything by telling you that Aaron Rodgers is in a good spot this week. He's always in a good spot. He's the best quarterback on the slate this week, aside from the Thursday to Monday slate. But the truth of the matter is that a lot of times we just don't figure out ways to get them in our lineup, even though there may be 8-9 more points in him and the next tier of quarterbacks. So Rodgers on the road here against the Cowboys, certainly someone I'm going to consider. 9,500 on FanDuel, 81 on DK. Road dog in high total games above 50 points. He's 25 FanDuel points. on average with 73% consistency. I mean, that's security that I'm willing to pay up for when other guys, other lineups possibly are risking it this week with you know, cheap quarterbacks. I'm okay saying, you know what, there's a chance, you're right, there's a chance that Carson Palmer goes for 25. There's a chance that Josh McCown has a great game. There's a chance that one of these guys does really well, but I like Rodgers safely. I think you can easily slate him for 20-point floor, no doubt about it. The volume is going to be there. The third in total attempts in the league with 10 touchdowns on the year. He's got a 100 passer rating. He's been very good. Dallas ranking 24th in defensive efficiency overall. 21 to the pass, 28 to the rush. So you've got to like the Packers' ability to move the ball all up and down the field. And once we get into the red zone, we know they are going to throw the ball. They throw the ball more than anybody inside the red zone. And listen, this is actually a defense, from a matchup perspective, one of the best matchups they've had in a while. You know, Atlanta, Cincinnati, and Chicago rank better in DVOA. I mean, they're all... Cincinnati is the only elite defense that they faced, and they gave them a test. By elite, I mean top 10 unit. You know, Atlanta and Chicago are middle average 20 somethings, but the Cowboys have struggled. They're 22 in adjusted fantasy points allowed. They're allowing over 25 completions per game to the quarterback, 65% completion rate, and 2 touchdowns. So, I mean, I think it's very safe to say that at a minimum, you're going to pencil Aaron Rodgers in for the basic average of what the Cowboys have allowed this season of 250 yards and 2 touchdowns. That's fine. 20-point floor with a couple rushes, because we know, you know, he throws in 20 rush yards per game. Fine, 20-point floor. He made 20-point floor, and let's hope that this game shoots out and it has a 50-point total. So, you know, even with only 2 touchdowns, that just seems very, very conservative, considering how much the Packers throw, how often they throw in the red zone, and how many points the Cowboys are allowing per game. So if Timont was playing, I would just be in love, like gaga over this. But I don't know that you're going to pair him with anybody. Randall Cobb would be somebody that I'm going to talk about later. But with Aaron Jones, I think he probably gets 15 carries. And there's talk that Jamal Williams might play with a sore knee. So I don't think you can go to the backfield. And as far as perfect matchup in this situation, there's no outlier perfect matchup. Jordy Nelson is pretty much matchup proof. And the reason I say that is because he was phenomenal in that Cincinnati game. We see him against elite corners be absolutely excellent. He just has the hands. He's a magnet in the end zone. And from a fantasy perspective, he is matchup proof. I think Randall Cobb is in a good spot. I just don't think you have to force it with stacking him. I think it's okay to run out of naked Rodgers is what I'm trying to say. If you want to pivot off of him, I mean, just go down to Russell Westbrook. Russell Westbrook. Uh-oh, basketball. Russell Wilson. And I think that this is actually going to be a relatively low-owned play this week. At 8K, Russ is probably going to go overlooked because the next tier down in the 7Ks is just so appealing from a matchup perspective that anybody with, you know, any sort of research behind them is going to say, oh, I'm going to take the cheaper quarterback. But meanwhile, Russell Westbrook with 2 30-point fantasy outings in his last 2, it's just kind of a dead pricing tier. 8K, 7.1 on DK, 8K on FanDuel. 7 TDs in the last 2 weeks, and he is the offense. I mean, I've said this. He is the best player on this offense. It's hard to project Jimmy Graham. It's hard to project Doug Baldwin. The backfield is a mess. We don't know who's going to catch touchdowns on a weekly basis. Last, I mean, it was Jared McKissick and who? The backup tight end, Tillerson? I don't know who it was. I can't even remember the guy's name. I mean, that's kind of how it goes sometimes with the Seahawks. So he's the one that you want. He's the elite talent on this team. You know, a couple things that are good in his corner right now. He performs better as the season goes along. And actually, if you look at his month-to-month splits, anything beyond September, he's got a positive plus minus in his projection. So, you know, the Rams defense, not a doormat. That's the one thing I will say. This is not a perfect matchup, and I think you could very comfortably say that Rodgers has a better matchup, and there's a number of better matchups down in the 7K range that I like just as much. You know, him and Russ and Dak, for as consistent as they are and as talented as they are, And as much as I like rostering them from a fantasy perspective, they don't have perfect matchups this week. And the Rams defense currently ranked 13th in DVOA. The run defense allows massive, massive production. I'm not going to try to project that run defense. I'm not going to do that to you guys. I'm not going to say, like, you need to try to think Russell Thomas Rawls is going to get carries or McKissick is going to get the work or it's going to be Lacy again with 13 touches. It's just not, it's not fair, and I don't think it's a good investment of your money. It's one of those things that you say, okay, what's their range of outcomes compared to someone that I can actually project? And you go to someone that you can actually project, right? I mean, you're not, it doesn't matter if they score 20 points when it's very possible that there are 12 other running backs on the board that you have an easier time projecting to score 20 points. You know what I mean? So I don't think you worry about the running backs. I think you worry about Russ. I mean, the Rams defense, like I said, good in DVOA, but they're ranked 23rd in adjusted fantasy points allowed to the quarterback. It's got to be primarily because teams have moved the ball so efficiently on the run against them. And when you generate that much yardage on the ground, you set up the pass game. Even though they have some really elite corners, you know, they 12 targets last week for Dez Bryant. You only caught, what, 5 of them for 90 yards? So there is certainly some concern with attacking the Rams through the air here, but I still like Russ in this game to try and keep them in it, because I think they will have to fight to stay in it against Gurley and the Rams, who are scoring a shit ton of points. The thing is I think that the part of the appeal here with Russ is that this isn't just an absolute cake matchup. Now, he's had two solidly cake matchups in his last 2 weeks. I think it's interesting you put him in a situation where the Seahawks could allow some points. They allowed points to the Titans. They allowed a decent amount of points to the Packers. They're now down Cliff Averill. They're now down Jeremy Lain. They're on the road where we know they don't play as well. So Russ could have to put this team on his back and really, really make some things happen, which could force negative game script and a lot of passing volume. But I think it's also kind of a reason to say, okay, I don't need to go to Russ. Just I can go down to the 7K tier. And, it starts with Dak against Green Bay at 7-9 and on FanDuel. I have no problem with Dak against Green Bay as a home favorite. We ran the trend last week. We know he averages over 20 points. I think he's going to have to be forced to throw the ball quite a bit. Dez is in a really good spot. So a Dak to Dez stack I have no issues with that whatsoever. And we saw Ezekiel Elliott. He was very effective last week. We saw Devonta Freeman in a home matchup against the Packers. He was effective. So have they faced really good running backs recently? Not really. I mean, they gave up some yardage to Joe Mixon. They gave up some yardage to not a lot of yardage to Jordan Howard and Tariq Cohen. But this defense is, it kind of had, some good matchups. We know the Seattle run game is terrible, and we know their offensive line is susceptible to the pass rush. So what happened in week one? Well, Seattle sputtered, right? Big time. So I think you could go to Dak, but I also really don't mind Carson Wentz. Carson Wentz at 7-6 is interesting to me in this spot. And I think he probably goes overlooked and under-owned, but I think that against Arizona, it's a sneaky amount of production being allowed here. 25 in adjusted fantasy points allowed to the quarterback, 28 to wide receivers in PPR formats. People go, Arizona, for real? You click on that FanDuel thing and it says they're top 10 in defense across the board. Well, not completely true. I mean, it's not Patrick Peterson's fault, but the bottom line is that wide receivers are scoring against them. 19th in DVOA, totally. And pass DVOA, and they're very good against the rush. 12th in fantasy points allowed, adjusted fantasy points allowed to the running back, and 5th in rush DVOA. I think that a lot of the pressure that's being put on this secondary comes from pace and the fact that they haven't been able to get a lead. We talked about how the Cardinals have been playing from behind basically all season long. They're throwing the ball a shit ton. They have no clock control. They are third in pace, third overall in pace, just 25 seconds per play. You're increasing the amount of repetitions and the exposure that your defense and time has to be on the floor. Eventually, they're going to wear down. They're going to give up production because opposite teams are throwing him. I mean, Brian Hoyer threw the ball almost as much as Palmer last week, threw the ball 45 times. And they have a running game. They have Carlos Hyde, So very, very interesting. And I think the nice thing is that – the Eagles just got rated by Pro Football Focus today, like month-to-month offensive line evaluation. Eagles were number one unit at the beginning of the year. They're top three right now. They're number three in the league right now, an elite unit. They've allowed Wentz plenty of time. He has been solid this year. You know, he's not throwing the ball as much. In the last two games, they've been able to run it, so they haven't been throwing the ball very much against the Giants and the Chargers, but they ran the ball a lot against the Chargers, if you remember. When we saw him against the Chiefs and the Redskins, however, two teams that actually have halfway decent run defenses, they threw the ball. They threw the ball quite a bit, and they're not afraid to let Wentz, you know, rack up some throws. So I think against Arizona, they could certainly throw the ball, especially if they get, you know, into kind of a back-and-forth situation because Philadelphia's passing defense is allowing Arizona to actually score. Then you have an interesting game script for Wentz here. Behind a really, really good offensive line. And like I said, he's got 7 touchdowns, 1,000 passing yards, 2 interceptions, 60% completion rate. He's right there, dead middle, in the quarterback, solid tier, edge of QB1 with like Russell Wilson and those guys. So I don't mind Carson Wentz in this situation. I think he probably goes slightly overlooked, and I think that they can win this game at home with a better defense. So I like that situation. I like that. The other issue, though, is you can very easily pivot to the opposite side of this game to Carson Palmer, okay? We know he's throwing the ball almost 50 times per game. He's third in overall attempts in the league behind Brady. It goes Brady, Manning, Palmer. Rivers just torched this team for 3 touchdowns last week on 30 attempts. They're going to throw the ball. They're going to throw the ball a lot. And, you know, it's Larry Fitzgerald, it's John Brown, it's Jerron Brown. They're all healthy, relatively healthy. But they're all going to be out there. Yandre Ellington has been a useful piece for them. And the secondary is not good. Now, the Philadelphia pass rush has been solid and, you know, above average, I guess is what I'll say. And the Arizona offensive line in that same article by PFF is ranked 30th overall in the league. Absolutely brutal. You know, injuries plus the fact that they're throwing the ball so much, this volume of pass opportunities, they have to be pass blocking that often and not be able to try to get downhill. And everybody knows it's coming. They're going to throw the ball, peel your ears back, and just bum rush. That's exhausting for an offensive line to be on their heels all day, every single day, and not be able to just put your face down, lean forward, and let David Johnson take the ball field 25 times a game. That's exhausting. That's a problem. So it could end up being a rough day for Palmer, you know, and that game could end up being ugly, but it could also, based on the way these pass defenses are allowing production, it could end up being a lot of there could end up being a lot of scoring coming from the quarterback position. 2 value guys you got to consider. 3, really. I'll add one more at the end here. Jay and Joshy, baby. Jay Cutler and Josh McCown, 6'7 and 6'8 respectively on FanDuel, 5'2 and 4.5K. Josh McCown on DraftKings. He's the same price as Brian Hoyer, actually. And Brian Hoyer is another name that we should put in this conversation. I will talk about him in 1 second against Indianapolis. The thing about Jay and Josh is this. They have the best matchups on the board. It's not even close. Cleveland, for McCown, Cleveland is allowing a 7.2% touchdown rate to the quarterback, 8.9 adjusted yards per attempt. Those are 2 of the worst marks in the league. Third worst in the league third worst in the league. Excuse me, not the second worst in the league. Third worst in the league, 32 in adjusted fantasy points allowed to the quarterback. Are you kidding me? 32 fantasy points allowed to the quarterback per game? Like, unbelievable. 30th overall ranked defense. They're fine against the rush. They're terrible against the pass. They're terrible against wide receiver ones. Jacoby Brissett had a game. You mean to tell me that Jacoby Brissett can have a game and Josh McCown's not going to have a game? Josh McCown's got a 70% completion rate on the year. That's not a joke. Now, Myles Garrett is coming back, but I think Myles Garrett, if anything, a young Myles Garrett probably, more than anything, really gums up that rush attack that they wanted to execute. He's a defensive tackle. Let's remember that. He's going to be on the interior, and he can get chipped, and he can get two-manned. So, you know, a non-existent pass rush definitely gets upgraded to a slightly existent pass rush, but that secondary still is not very good. The problem is that the Jets really don't throw the ball that often, and we'll talk about that. For Jay, oh my God, Deshaun Watson scored five touchdowns against this defense. Russell Wilson did four. I mean, Jay's not good. It's Jay. You know, but Tennessee allows a 70.3% touchdown rate, 8.23 adjusted yards per attempt. They're 29th in adjusted fantasy points allowed to the quarterback, 31st in overall defensive DVOA. This defense is bleeding points to quarterbacks in passing offenses. Bleeding points. It comes down to trust. Do you trust either one of them? No, you shouldn't. Neither of them has been elite. Then neither of them have been able to stay on an NFL roster. They both just got picked up this year. Okay, but they do have arm talent, and they do have deep ball potential, so there's that. They have multiple sacks per game, however, and multiple interceptions as well on the year. McCown, he's been more accurate, but way fewer attempts. 70% completion rate, that's nice, but, I mean, the sacks and the interceptions, not really that great either. Over three games, four games, not really what you want to see. Taking multiple negative plays there. I don't love his receivers either. I mean, you're throwing to Robbie Anderson and Jermaine Kearse. Austin Seferian-Jenkins is a really good spot, so you got to love that. And it's nice to see that Elijah McGuire and Bilal Paul would be coming out of the backfield to catch balls. But, you know, I don't know. I mean, McCown is interesting. It's difficult to read him. Jay has the weapons. That's the thing. I mean, he is going to be able to hand the ball off to Jay, who, regardless of how bad this offensive line is playing, Tennessee's rush defense isn't good either. I mean, there's a reverse funnel defense that doesn't even really stop the rush. Ask Lamar Miller and Deonte Foreman. They ran the ball down their throat in the second half, and they had no problem holding on to the ball. That's how Watson was able to actually get to five touchdowns. They just kept running the ball and ended up in the red zone, and Watson was able to create after that. So, you know, Jay's going to be able to give the ball to Ajayi. He's going to be able to force feed Devontae Parker and Jarvis Landry like he wants to do. And Devontae Parker versus Jarvis Landry. Devontae Parker and Jarvis Landry versus Robert Anderson and Jermaine Kearse. Who do you want to throw the ball to? Come on, man. It's not even close. It's not even close. I mean, Kenny Stills is better than Robbie Anderson. From a career standpoint, yes, he is. I don't know if there's any Jets truthers out there who disagree with me, but maybe Anderson has more of a ceiling. Yes, he's younger. Okay, fine. But Kenny Stills has produced more consistently while he's been in the league. So I'm going to say that he's more valuable. Let's say this. McCown has the floor just based on matchup and his completion rate. Jay has the ceiling. And if you're going to take a risk here, I think that you got to look at Jay Cutler at home as well. That's an at-home situation. And they're throwing the ball more. Gase is calling 65-35 pass-to-run ratio versus 55-45 pass-to-run ratio for the Jets. So you're going to get more volume. You have better weapons. You're at home. And Tennessee, like, they're not going to be able to stay on the damn field. They're not. They're not going to be able to stay on the field because Matt Castle was terrible last week. I told you guys. He had four completions, but guess what else he had? He had two sacks and two interceptions. So he had as many completions as he had negative plays. Wow. That's terrible. It's absolutely terrible. That's why they signed Brandon Weeden. I'm not excited about Brandon Weeden. Why are you excited about Brandon Weeden? No one should be excited about Brandon Weeden. The entire internet is flipping out about Brandon Weeden. It's just a terrible situation. The one guy that might go overlooked is, of course, Brian Hoyer. Now, Hoyer proved in only one game this year that he has stuff. But it was against the Rams. Remember that? He had 32 fantasy points against the Rams. In all the other three matchups, however, he has not scored 10 points. Well, there's a damning statistic. He hasn't scored more than 10 points in three other games this year. Now, okay, fine. Granted, one was against Seattle. One was against Arizona. I get it. And one was against Carolina. Seattle, Arizona, Carolina. What do those things have? What do they have in common? From a personnel perspective, those are some damn good defenses. The back half of those defenses, the secondary linebackers, those are good teams, okay? And against one average team like the Rams, he put up numbers, which is part of the reason why you're like, wait a second, McCown put up, excuse me, you're kind of like, Hoyer put up numbers on the Rams. Dak put up numbers on the Rams. What's Russ going to do? You know what I mean? Yes, they had two good games against Cousins. The reason Cousins didn't put up any numbers, by the way, is because Cousins didn't, they didn't run the ball. They ran the ball the entire time. Cousins didn't throw the ball. He threw the ball like 22 times. And he had one touchdown. The rest of it was just Rob Kelly. They literally gave the ball, I think, to 40 different attempts to their backs in that game. So Russ is very still very interesting to me. And I think Hoyer has stuff. Against Indianapolis here, we just saw Russell Wilson put up, you know, three touchdowns against them. We know he's got healthy weapons. Carlos Hyde is healthy. We know Pierre Garçon is going to be there. The only guy he's going to be missing is Marquise Goodwin. All right, fine. You miss your one big threat opportunity. You still have George Kittle, who he's been targeting quite a bit. You still have your running backs, Matt Breida. You still have Juszczyk, all those kind of guys. So I don't know. I mean, Hoyer's interesting. I think he's obviously a tournament play. He's not a cash game quarterback. Because if he gets you 8 points, your Sunday's over. Running back. This is easy. It's nice. It's always nice when Lev Bell is a lock and load, and you don't have to think about how highly owned he's going to be and how much of a good play he is. It's just nice. I mean, I wish we had Team Jam. I mean, I wish every week we had to worry about David Johnson and Lev Bell. It would make things so much easier. You'd just be like, yeah, David Johnson and Lev Bell, I'm playing them both this week. Again, I'm playing them both. Why not? Yeah, I mean, he's 9-5 on both sites. He's the number one price running back overall. He's got one of the best matchups on the board. Here's the strangest statistic about Jacksonville. You ready for this? 32 in pass DVO, or rush DVOA. I fucking screwed it up. It was going to be so dramatic and poignant, and I just totally botched it. Hold on, pause. Here's an interesting statistic about the Jaguars. They are 32 in rush DVOA, number one in pass DVOA. It is a reverse funnel defense to the max. They are trying to take away all the passing opportunities. They are pinning back their ears and just rushing the passer, and they are allowing their corners all the help that they need, and they are letting people run the ball on them for almost 5 full yards per clip. Unbelievable. Weird scheme. But it makes sense. What are they trying to do? They're trying to slow down the game. They're just trying to bleed clock. And I think that this is an interesting idea. I mean, if you say to teams, like, go ahead, run. We're not going to let you make a big play. We're going to let you take 4-yard chunks every single time. That's fine. Drain the clock. We will also drain the clock. And we will keep this thing close, and then we'll win when it counts. That's actually not a bad plan when fucking Blake Bortles is your quarterback. Can't beat the Jets. you know, can't beat the Jets with one of the best rookie running backs and some of the best secondary in the league. It's kind of a Blake problem. So, you know, Jacksonville allowing massive, massive rush yardage. We saw 39 opportunities for Lev Bell last week. He's going up against a team that's allowed 30th most points to adjusted fantasy points to the running back. Everybody's going to play him. Just play him. He's got 4 yards per touch. He had 39 chances last week. He had 2 touchdowns against Baltimore, who's also kind of a reverse funnel defense, but not even close to the same as Baltimore, or excuse me, as Jacksonville is. He's had at least 1 goal line per carry. Just lock him in. Just that's fine. And then figure out the rest. The other guy, I mean, I think Gurley is borderline lock. He's 7.8K on FanDuel, 8K on DraftKings. He's a borderline lock. And here's why, okay? He's becoming Le'Veon Bell. He's getting the same volume of carries and targets, and he's leading all running backs. He's second in snap share of all running backs. He's leading all running backs in touches. He's got a matchup with the Seahawks. Now, on face value, everybody who sees that goes, ho, no way, man. He's been good, but he's not that good. Yeah, I know a lot about football because I know the Seahawks are a good defense. Not doing that. No way. Nice. Yeah, well, you're kind of wrong, actually. Seattle is actually ranked 30th in rush DVOA. They face Tymont. They face Derrick Henry and DeMarco Murray. And they face Frank Gore. And Carlos Hyde. So middling running backs. There's no one in that tier that you go, oh, well, you know what? Maybe the numbers from the so-and-so skewed them. No, no. They're allowing yards per carry. They're allowing straight-up yardage, a total of 140 total scrimmage yards to running backs this year. We saw Carlos Hyde put up 120 yards on them on 23 touches. He gashed them. They're 21st in adjusted fantasy points allowed to the running back. Listen, I'm not saying this is a lock and load spot for Gurley. And the reason that I get concerned is that Pete Carroll's gum-chewing ass knows that they've been giving up a ton of yardage. And he's standing in the film room right now going, chomp, 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 chomp. Yeah, we got to stop Gurley. That's all we got to do, brother. That's all we got to do. Hey, listen, you guys stop Gurley. You're awesome. You're the best. I love you guys. You're great men. We're going to win on football on Sunday. The more and more I have to watch Pete Carroll, the more and more annoyed I get with him. But listen, Gurley's going to get the volume, and volume is king, period. Opportunity is king at the position. McVay has shown a commitment to get his blessed player the football. That is Todd Gurley. And they still have to account for Sammy Watkins and Cooper Kupp. It's not a cupcake matchup on the secondary's perspective. They've shown talent. They have talent. So it's not like they can just completely abandon the secondary and run straight downhill at Todd Gurley. It's just not the case. Goff has been fine. This is not the same matchup as the 49ers. This is not the same matchup as the Cowboys. But this is also not the same matchup as the Redskins. The Redskins have shown themselves to be a pretty solid defense, and he had a decent amount of yardage and two touchdowns against the Redskins. I mean, the Redskins limited Kareem Hunt, no touchdowns to him. They limited, you know, Marshawn Lynch to like 10 yards. So there is something to be said for performing that well against that quality of defense. I just think you cannot fade the volume. You can't fade the O-line production. And you definitely can't overlook the fact that he has had 8 goal line opportunities this year, leading in position in goal line opportunities, almost 2 goal line opportunities per game. So I think there's something to be said for taking this volume against Seattle and just saying, you know what, it's okay. Carlos Hyde, though, very interesting. 7-2 on DraftKings, or FanDuel, 6-9 on DraftKings. Indy, 26th overall in DVOA, 23rd against the pass, 24th against the rush. They're just allowing teams to move the ball. The people are just marching up and down the field. 400 total yards per game. That's 31st in the NFL. That's the most yardage per game beyond the Patriots. 21 touches per game, roughly, for Carlos Hyde. He's getting at least a goal line carry there. I think the upside really lies in the fact that it's total productivity of the San Francisco offense. If we can project that the San Francisco offense is going to get 400 total yards, okay, maybe, right? We saw him do it once against the Rams. Sure, they struggled in some of those other matchups, so this is one of the worst defenses that they will have faced. Only unit that really is in top half of the league. Great. Okay. And, you know, they move the ball. They can move the ball. As long as they can move the ball, then you're going to create opportunities for Gore, who has been, you know, getting good amount of snaps, 60%+ of snaps, you know. And the Colts, listen, they're giving up 34 points per game. That's the most points per game. This is the worst defense by a massive margin that this San Francisco team has faced. So I think it's fair for us to say, okay, this San Francisco team has looked better. We've seen flashes. They've had a couple tough matchups. This should be a good spot. Let's be bullish. Let's not be bearish just because there's San Francisco 49ers. I mean, Carolina, week one. LA, week two, where they were good. Arizona week three and Seattle week two, LA week three, Arizona week four. Carlos Hyde's produced in all of those matchups. Nearly 100 scrimmage yards last week. He just didn't get in the end zone. So Indy is certainly a matchup that we want to exploit there as well. Can I interest you in some Duke Johnson? Perhaps a Christian McCaffrey, vintage 2017. It's from Northern California. A very, very nice white. I'm not going to edit that out. Because I'm not going to edit that out because it worked out too well. Anyway, all right. These are matchup plays. Duke Johnson and Christian McCaffrey. Duke facing the Jets. They've allowed 6 receptions and 55 yards. That's top 10 number 2 running backs overall on the year in the receiving game. They're 31st in running back points allowed. That's really nice. He's the leading receiver on this team. He's on the field for over 60% of snaps. He almost averages 9 yards per touch, and he's got about 10 touches per game. So you're looking at 100 scrimmage yards from a guy who's priced in the bottom of the barrel. He's going to catch maybe 10 balls. His targets have gone, or excuse me, his total touches went from, or, no, his targets went from 8 to 13 last week. His total touches about 10 per game. He's the most useful offensive weapon that this team has. There's no doubt in my mind. McCaffrey, on the other hand, very interesting spot for him. Kind of a bounce back guy, I see. He just burned everyone. Everyone was like, lock spot against New England, terrible defense. Well, he's the only freaking Panther that didn't perform. Detroit has been average against the running back. And very good against quarterbacks and wide receivers. Like, they have been very good at limiting. And I said this game could get very ugly. The key thing, though, is that they are allowing 60 receiving yards to opposing running backs on 66 receptions. So you're seeing the same amount of production allowed to passing backs. You know, this is not the highest amount of passing production that's allowed, but Atlanta's not on the slate. New Orleans is on, or Atlanta and New Orleans are on bye. New England's not on the slate, and we don't know who's going to catch the ball against the Cowboys. Cowboys allow massive production to pass-catching running backs. I don't know who's going to catch the ball. Is it going to be Jamal Williams or Aaron Jones? Aaron Jones is a basically just a running guy. This is why Ty Montgomery, where are you? So I think that, you know, listen, if you get 6 for 60 from Christian McCaffrey, fine. You get that floor of 10 or 12 points. You go, come on, get in for the touchdown. If one of those turns into a touchdown, your day is made. 18 total points, and everybody goes, oh, man, I played McCaffrey every week except for this one. You know, thank you for tweeting that. We appreciate you. Wide receiver. Let's move on down here because we got a lot to talk about. I got like 9 different, well, more than that. I like the wide receiver position this week, but it's not hard. It's not hard. It's actually pretty nice this week. You don't have to pay up because there's, you know, it's tempting, but I'll talk about some guys you could pay up for if you want. But the best is Dez. I mean, and Dez is going to be very highly owned. You can just go with Dez and Lev in all of your lineups, and everybody is going to be like, great, we all have the same people. We'll sink and swim together. That makes totally sense. And guys, in a head-to-head, that's not a big deal. That's not a big deal. You just got to beat him in some of the other decisions that you make, and I'm good with that. That's like saying, hey, listen, you got 7 out of 9 right. I got 8 out of 9 right. Sorry, man. I'll take your dollar. Dez at 7'8", 6'5" on DraftKings. What's going on with that, DraftKings? Come on, you guys don't account for volume? He's 4th in overall targets, the team 28% market share. Motherfucker has seen the Broncos, the Giants, and the Cardinals. Aqib Talib, Janoris Jenkins, and Patrick Patterson. Come on, man. They don't account for matchups. I don't know what it is. My algorithm doesn't like him. Oh, and Trumaine Johnson last week, who let him see 12 targets but didn't only let him catch 5 balls. Now, Dak has been very careful. There's not a lot of catchable targets coming his way. And I think a lot of what Dak is doing is saying, listen, bro, I'm going to put the ball somewhere where only you can get it. I don't want these guys making plays on the ball, but I also don't want them thinking we're not going to target them. I think they've been doing this on purpose. They've been force-feeding the ball in order to create the illusion that they are willing to throw the ball to Dez and forcing corners to react. And listen, it's worked. He had 3 touchdowns in those tough matchups. He had touchdowns. He had 3 end zone opportunities against the Giants. He didn't create, but he scored a touchdown against Denver. He scored a touchdown against the Rams and the Cardinals. So, you know, certainly is a game plan that seems to be working for them. But now he gets an actual good matchup. These fourth. Oh my gosh, you guys, listen to this. Just got a push notification. Ty Montgomery, Jamal Williams at practice. Sorry, it took me about, 10 minutes to read one sentence there. I apologize. Ty Montgomery and Jamal Williams at practice. Again, who's the most projectable asset in that offense? Aaron Rodgers. If Ty Mont plays, great. Catches 10 balls and runs for 40 yards. You don't have to play Ty Montgomery to have that production. You can have that production from Aaron Rodgers. It's the most projectable asset in the offense. Anyway, all right. Green Bay, back to Dez. 21st in adjusted fantasy points allowed to the wide receiver, and we've seen them struggle with wide receiver ones. They've been fine against some really, meh offensive, very below average performance to the Seahawks, or by the Seahawks in week one on the road. We saw that we all watched that and go, oh, geez. Okay. Week two, Julio was chalk. Julio performed. He did great. 100 some odd yards, plenty of volume. Week three, we saw AJ Green toast them. 10 catches, 120 yards, and a touchdown. Beautiful. AJ Green chalk week. Last week, Bears, they weren't on the main slate. Thank God. No one cares. No one wants to play Bears receivers because there's no wide receivers in Bears uniforms. They're all just guys off the street pretending to be wide receivers. So, hey, let's go to Dez. I have no problem going to Dez here. The run defense is good. They put pressure on the quarterback, but I think that Dez will be in a really, really good spot to actually take advantage of the volume that he has been seeing. Now, I have no problem with Odell. I have no problem with Jordy. Odell is 8,500 on both sites. And I don't know how healthy he is, but he's practicing. So that's a good sign. That means it's just a nagging little thing that he feels okay with. So I'm not going to, I'm not going to guess and, be skeptical about the injury because he played through it 2 weeks in a row and he looked phenomenal. So I'm not going to, I'm not going to guess. This guy can ball. Like, it's Odell Beckham Jr. Am I worried about Casey Hayward a little bit? Yeah, I do, but Odell does line up all over the place. They will mix and match to try and get him in good spots. He's seen double-digit targets in 2 weeks. Multiple touchdown opportunities in both of those weeks. We saw the two touchdowns and three red zone targets against the Eagles. We saw a red zone and end zone target against the Bucks last weekend. On 13 targets, Chargers 25th in adjusted fantasy points allowed to the wide receiver. They're not immune to fantasy points to the wide receiver. 18th in DVOA against the wide receiver one. So, Casey Hayward, he's good, but this defense as a unit is not that good. The edge is that he probably goes overlooked because everybody's like, well, Dez is so much easier to project. And Casey Hayward, boom, people stop talking right there. So you can easily go to Odell in this situation where he has been phenomenal at home. 18.6 FanDuel points with 73% consistency as an average. Come on, man. You mean you don't want to roster Odell for 8.5 or 18 fantasy points? 100 yards and a touchdown? Yeah, you do. I would roster him. I just don't know if I can afford him because of running back scarcity. Jordy, I don't like his matchup that much. But he's just so hard to ignore. He leads the league in touchdowns again right now. Red zone targets again right now. He's averaged 22 fantasy points per game. The guy is just filthy. He's got Rodgers. They've connected in tougher matchups. Seahawks touchdown. Cincinnati touchdown. Two touchdowns against Cincinnati. Bears, that's not really a challenge. And he left the Falcons game. He didn't even play one game this week. And he leads the league in receiving touchdowns. This team leads the league in red zone pass volume. It's Jordy Nelson every single time. If you want a touchdown at the wide receiver position, just kind of go to Jordy Nelson. Now, they're not at home, and I think the corners for the Packers on the edges are much better than the one that's going to be facing Randall Cobb. So let's talk about Randall Cobb here in a second. Pivoting down to this mid-tier, Randall Cobb, Larry Fitzgerald, both very interesting to me. 6'7 and 6'6 on FanDuel, priced similarly on DK. Let me check this here. Let me check this out. Hold on 1 second. Sorry, I didn't write their DraftKings. I didn't write their DK prices down. Larry is 6'8 on DK, which isn't as good a value. Randall Cobb is 6'7 on DK. So price very similar on both sites. I think the value is probably there on FanDuel. Listen, the team that throws the ball the most in the red zone, even more than the Packers? It's the Cardinals. They're third in pass attempts in the league. Larry is running 100% of routes on snaps where he is on the floor, the court, on the, geez, of the field. 48% weighted opportunity ranking per airyards.com. A great metric, by the way, that basically says, okay, given your market share of air yards, your opportunities per game, your average depth of target, your number of receptions, your catch rate, all that kind of stuff, how much is that all worth? It's called weighted opportunity rating. 48% weighted opportunity. That's great. At least one end zone target per game. That's great. Philadelphia is 28th in adjusted fantasy points allowed to the wide receiver. We saw that Keenan Allen just destroyed them. Absolutely destroyed them. He is still healthy. Larry's still doing good. He's hanging in there. The drop-off probably won't come until, I don't know, week 7 or 8. So I think we can assume that he is good. No reason not to play him at this price. Philadelphia allows 66% completion rate to 66% completion rate and nearly 2 touchdowns per game to the wide receiver. Yeah, I mean that's the way to do it. I have no problem with Larry Fitzgerald. Sorry, I'm getting text messages and updates here about different practice reports. And my phone is doing that buzz thing it does on Wednesday and Thursday afternoon. That's like, so-and-so's out. So-and-so is limited. So-and-so will not be practicing. Great. Sorry. I need to know this stuff, but kind of distracts you. Randall Cobb is the other guy. No problem with Randall Cobb. Absolutely zero issue, especially if Devontae Adams doesn't play. His target share goes up. You get about 6 targets that are going to get redistributed. And you can go to Geronimo Allison, but let's remember what Geronimo Allison is. Geronimo Allison is a fast. He is a fast man. That is what he does. He does things quickly. That is all. Randall Cobb is a real wide receiver. And the slot has been really productive against the Cowboys. Listen, we talked about Emmanuel Sanders, Fitz, Cooper Kupp. They all were the leading wide receivers on their team in those games. Because if you want to attack the Cowboys pass defense, you do it out of the slot. Cobb runs 85% of his routes out of the slot. Even if Adams plays, it doesn't matter. That's where they're going to go to him. They know. They're going to watch the film. They're going to say, what's the trend? It's attack Scandrick. Go. Boom. It's all good. 22% target share. He leads his team in total targets and receptions. And so long as the Packers are throwing the ball and they're not trying to run the ball with, you know, their hobbled backfield, you got some. Cobb is very much in play. He's very much in play. So I like him. I don't think he gets the same amount of volume as Larry because you still have Jordy on the field. You still have Martellus Bennett on the field. So Larry is certainly, now, I mean, you could say the same thing about Jerron Brown. I get it. But I just think Larry is going to continue to get consistent volume, especially in a good matchup here in Philadelphia. You got to like him in this spot. Now, there's a whole group of guys, 5 different guys who are elite wide receiver ones on their team. And I want to talk about them because I want to give them their names and I want to give you why I like them, but why I'm also have hesitations about them. And I'll leave that ball in your court. But there are 5 guys that I need you to pay attention to and just make a mental note of. You don't have to play them, but make a mental note of. And if you go, oh, no, I don't like him. No, that's fine. That's fine. Cross them off your list. Here they are. Alshon, Doug Baldwin, T.Y. Hilton, DeAndre Hopkins, Pierre Garçon. Anywhere between 7.5 and 6.7K. I like these guys. They all have one thing in common. They're the team leader in targets, highest target share on their team from the wide receiver perspective. Okay? Now, there's a couple of them that have, you know, competing tight ends here. Alshon and Baldwin have competing tight ends in their system, but they are basically the leading wide receiver. They have a decent matchup. Alshon versus Arizona. We talked about that matchup with Wentz. Baldwin versus the Rams. Okay, we've seen the Rams give up production to guys like Brian Hoyer, Pierre Garçon, Dak and Dez. Okay, T.Y. Hilton. He's got San Francisco at home. T.Y. Hilton at home was a borderline lock last year. DeAndre Hopkins. 74% target share. I'm kidding. It's like 40%, but it's still crazy how many targets he gets. And he looks good, man. He looks good. He has a rapport with Watson. Pierre Garçon, leader in targets on the San Francisco 49ers. Indy's pass defense, not good. Here is the downside to each of them. You ready for this? Alshon, downside. Patrick Peterson, he's not the problem with this defense. He's the top-rated corner. He's one of the best shadow corners in the league. And right behind him is Deion Branch. The two of them could easily make Alshon's day. Five targets, two receptions, 23 yards. Done. Bye. Doug Baldwin, banged up. Banged up. Rams pass defense has been pretty solid. They're top 10 in pass DVOA, and his target share can be hard to predict. Okay, especially if they go with a weird game script, which is why I always say the most predictable fantasy asset on the Seahawks is Russell Wilson. T.Y. Hilton, is it luck? Is it no luck? Luck is throwing at practice today. Is he going to play? I have no idea. But San Francisco, very average against the pass catchers, okay? But we saw this guy, Pierre Garçon, go off. Pierre Garçon, his problem is that he's on the San Francisco 49ers, and Brian Hoyer has only had, he had two games with Brian Hoyer where he was productive. It's kind of an on again, off again type thing. Okay. And DeAndre Hopkins, the Houston offensive line is bad and the Chiefs pass rush is pretty good. I worry that we may not see, I don't know, Hopkins could carve them up, but we still have not seen one wide receiver absolutely dice them up. Obviously the Patriots stayed in that game, but Deshaun Watson is not Tom Brady. And I'm not ready to crown Deshaun Watson until I see how he plays in this game. Because he, if he wins this game at home, he's immediate front runner for Rookie of the Year. You can't, you can say all you want about Leonard Fournette and Kareem Hunt and their numbers, but the pressure to be an NFL quarterback is so much greater. And if you are creating wins inside your division against one of the best teams in football, then you have to immediately put him as a front runner. But I'm not ready to crown him yet because he's faced the two worst pass defenses in back-to-back weeks. Two worst pass defenses in back-to-back weeks. Basically, everybody is producing against them. So I have no problem playing the wait and see with Hopkins and Watson and see how they do against this Chiefs team. Moving on to the value wide receivers. Those are names. You keep them in your mind. You can throw them away if you want. DeVante Parker. I'm going to have DeVante Parker everywhere. So is everybody. But, I mean, listen, he's one of the best plays on the board. He's cheap. He is 6,100 on FanDuel. He is 5,100 on – oh, no, 6,600 on DraftKings. So he's certainly a better value on FanDuel. He's Jay's lock guy. 230 receiving yards. Average depth of the target of 15. He has the most weighted opportunity, highest weighted opportunity rating on the Dolphins from airyards.com. Watson torched this team last week. Okay. Torched them. And if you liked what DeAndre Hopkins did, and you should like what Jay is going to be able to do, even though he's Jay, against this Tennessee defense. And the last thing that I'm going to say is, I said this, they're not going to be able to stay on the damn floor, on the damn field. Matt Castle's not going to be able to lead any offense for this team. So I really, really like Parker and the offense's chance to dictate this game and eat. Listen, the Chargers and the Saints are actually decent pass defenses. And he was – the Jets, I don't know what to say about the Jets game. I have no idea. But he did score a touchdown in that game in garbage time. But he had like 70 yards. Chargers and Saints are actually proven to be halfway decent pass defenses. I mean, that's just a fact, okay? I mean, you know, they're not – but this is the worst pass defense in the league behind New England. It's the worst pass defense on the slate. So we have to like DeVante Parker in this spot. Jerron Brown, man. If you don't want to play Larry, play Jerron Brown. He had 10 targets last week. He's min price on FanDuel at 4,500. And he is – I think he is – yeah, he's 4,500 on both sides, which is nice. It's a good price for him. I have no problem with John Brown. He's second in targets on the team to Larry. He's facing the Philadelphia pass defense that just we know just got shredded. We watched Tyrell Williams do it. John Brown, similar route runner. No doubt about that. He's hard to ignore. The possible pass volume is possible for deep touchdown. It's very, very difficult to ignore. The only thing that you don't like is the fact that the Cardinals offensive line is so bad. That's what you're really concerned about. But we saw the Chargers exploit this, you know, that deep slant last week. And I think Jerron Brown certainly could be a good target this week, definitely in tournaments. Jermaine Kearse is very interesting to me, you guys. Jermaine Kearse is more expensive, actually, than Jerron Brown. And I think if I had to compare him, I would probably take Jerron Brown, given the quality of quarterback and given, given you know, what we've already seen as far as volume. You know, Jermaine Kearse, though, is he's perfectly fine. He's 5,600 on FanDuel, 4,500 on DraftKings. You know, he is the team's wide receiver one. And the Browns have been torched by wide receiver ones. That's just a fact. Antonio Brown, T.Y. Hilton, who was it last week? A.J., all of them, okay? So Kearse leads his team in receptions and target share, but the problem is they don't really throw the ball that much. So, you know, I mean, leading a team, you know, he's like first place in, you know, the slow on in the slowest race division. You know, it's not that good. Given how much pass volume this team has, they don't really throw the ball that much. So it's kind of a rough pass unit. And, you know, so is there reason to like Kearse? Yes, there is. There's reason to like Kearse. There's reason to pivot to Kearse because of low ownership. And there's a very good chance that he absorbs, you know, seven targets in a touchdown. The complicated part is it's easier to project a guy like Jerron Brown in his offensive scheme where they throw the ball a ton more against a pass defense that's just as bad. You see what I'm saying? Even Kenny Stills is easier to project. So that's a difficult thing. Moving on to tight end. I'm not paying up for tight end this week. You can pay up for Ertz. You can pay up for Kelce. But listen, Arizona ranks 6th in adjusted fantasy points allowed to the tight end. Houston ranks 8th in adjusted fantasy points allowed. What do they have in common? They got decent linebackers. They got decent defensive ends who are athletic, safeties who can cover. You don't have to do it. You don't have to do it. You don't have to pay up there. I don't think you have to because there's a lot of really good options in the 5K range. And here they are. One, Evan Ingram, man. Evan Ingram has been great. 20% target share for the Giants. He's a freak athlete. 11 fantasy points per game. That's great. Facing the Chargers, who are a great matchup on paper. Only fourth in adjusted fantasy points allowed to the tight end, but 30th in DVOA. Here's the thing. We've seen teams succeed on them. We've seen teams also just decide not to threaten. Travis Kelce just didn't do anything against them. And Julius Thomas has been a non-entity. But when teams want to use the tight end against them, they do. They use the tight end against them in Denver. A.J. Derby had a game. They use the tight end in Philadelphia. Ertz had a game. So there's no reason not to like Evan Ingram in this situation. He's one of the most athletic tight ends on the board. He's 5,300. And Ertz, ASJ. Austin Seferian Jenkins, chalk week, baby. 5,500 against the Browns. Tight ends against the Browns. It's done. Josh McCown, revenge game. It's done. He's getting about 5 targets, 40 yards per game. Fine. Okay. I can take that from a cheap tight end. I would love to see him get in the end zone. Love to see him get a red zone target. He's attached to a pretty inefficient offense, though. So you prefer a guy who's attached to a more efficient offense and maybe an Evan Ingram in that situation. Giants at home, you kind of like the way that they maybe are going to be able to move the ball a little bit more effectively. Maybe Evan Ingram is a little bit more projectable, has a little bit of a higher floor opportunity, given the fact that the Giants offense should be a little bit of in a better spot. I don't know, though. I mean, the tight ends against the Browns are terrible. Or have been terrible or amazing, excuse me. So I think that you could definitely go to Austin Seferian Jenkins here. Hunter Henry is the opposite side of Evan Ingram. And listen, I know it's hard to project between him and Gates, and Gates is cheaper. You know, that's the thing is Gates is cheaper and he has the touchdowns. Gates just hasn't been catching anything. Hunter Henry is like 9 for 10 on his targets. He's one of the most efficient tight ends in the league right now. The Giants are one of the worst defending the tight end in the league. We saw Cam Brait and O.J. Howard go off against them. And I'm going to tie myself to the tight end who is more athletic, who's getting more snaps, between the 20s, especially if the Giants funnel and take away the wide receiver options and Tyrell Williams, Keenan Williams, Travis Benjamin. They're going to have to take those guys away. And they're going to have to worry about Melvin Gordon, even though Melvin Gordon is inefficient and hashtag not that good. They are going to have to worry about him. And if Hunter Henry can snake free, I think Hunter Henry could have a big one here. I think, you know, you could see an upwards of 6-7 targets for him, which is a lot for him in this spot. So I have no problem with him. I don't mind the value from Antonio Gates either, just as a touchdown hunt. I have no problem with that. But I think I prefer Henry to get involved and possibly stay involved in this situation if they need athleticism from the tight end position. Defense, Chiefs, baby. I want to be on the defense that everyone is going to go, I don't know, Deshaun Watson has been great. You guys have heard my skepticism about Watson. I love him, I love him, I love him, but I just think it's a lot of its matchup. When you know enough about these two teams, these last two teams that he's faced to see how bad their numbers are, you kind of have to be a little bit skeptical, especially when you saw how bad he was against a good pass defense in Jacksonville. I mean, right? And you saw how bad he was against a good pass defense in Cincinnati. So now he gets the Chiefs defense, which is a pretty well-rounded defense, period. You know, they're top half of the league in all of their marks, really good against the rush, especially. They've racked up plenty of sacks. They're top 10 in sacks, in sack rate, I think, if I remember that correctly. I'm sorry, I don't want to give you the wrong idea here. But they have been very good. I mean, they are probably one of the best defenses that this team will have faced in the last 3 weeks. Right? Fair enough to say that. Okay. Kansas City has 11 sacks on the year. 11 sacks on the year. So, yes, they are top. They're in the top 10 in sacks and 7.3% adjusted sack rate. So they're not in the highest of adjusted sack rate, but they are in the high level of high level of total sack numbers. So I have no problem with the Chiefs here. We know they can score. We know that they could possibly take advantage of the rookie. And I think it's a slightly contrarian option. But I also don't mind the Jets against Cleveland. They've been a target all year. I think this pass rush could cause a problem. We saw them, you know, they have actually been relatively effective. They're super cheap on FanDuel. They're like $4,300. And you know, Deshaun Kizer just takes way too many sacks. There's no offensive efficiency in this Cleveland unit. So I have no problem. I have no problem with them either. Kickers, Robbie Gould, Chris Boswell. Boom. Home favorites. Well, no, Robbie Gould's a road kicker for the San Francisco, but he's been really effective. He's been kicking a ton of field goals. And not missing, knock on wood, any of them. And he's min price. Chris Boswell, home favorite with the Pittsburgh Steelers. We know that they're going to be productive, move the ball. We like Lev Bell. Why wouldn't we like Chris Boswell to get a couple nice spots through the uprights here? So that's it, guys. Hey, if you want the player pool, you missed all those names. Oh, I didn't write them down. I was in the car. Oh, lineuplogicdfs.com. Type in your email. Get in there. Patreon.com. Get the full cheat sheet. See how I rate these players, whether they're cash game plays, leverage plays, tournament plays. See how Josh is ranking guys on DraftKings for pricing. You know, he's going to pay a lot more attention to the pricing stuff. Get the lineup show live stream where we build lineups on the show, talk through ideas, all that stuff. $10 a month. That's it. Money goes back into the show. I try to pay, you know, the bills on running a website and that kind of stuff. So that's where the money goes. That's it for me. Hey, I'll talk to you guys later. We'll see you on the flip side.